Welcome back. It's Beyond the Box Score. I'm Dan Schneier. That's Jacob Gann. And we are joined by Ryan Heath. And you know what that means. We're digging in the crates. We're getting deep down and dirty with the position today. We got to find all the uncut gems. We got to find all of the little nuggets that are going to lead you in the direction of finding stars, finding sleepers, crafting your strategy for this position. And that position today is tight ends. This show talks more about tight ends, Jacob, than I think any fantasy show in the entire world. And as Paulie said in the comments, thank you, Paulie, said, I'm more hyped for this episode. He knew Ryan was going to be on than Dave Richard looking out at an uncut lawn on a Sunday morning. And you know how excited Dave gets to cut that lawn. Ryan, how are you doing today, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. Yeah, just getting into the swing of the offseason, getting all these giant articles going that have to come out before the season. I'm starting to feel it. We're almost there. I can taste it.
Jacob, how about you, my friend?
Yeah, man, love talking tight ends. Excited to have Ryan here. So this is, for anybody who hasn't caught it, this is a continuation of a series we've been doing over the past couple of weeks where we dig into which stats matter in terms of predicting the next season's fantasy points. We've done quarterbacks. We've done running backs. We're going to do tight ends this week and wide receivers next week. And yeah, you know, this is my favorite position, man. So I'm looking forward to this.
It's the position that defines Beyond the Box Score for sure. And it's the one that I think is probably hardest to craft a strategy around because there are alternative ways to build out your tight end room in fantasy football. And I think all of them have valid, honestly, all of them valid cases to be made that you can go that route. So I'm excited to talk it. We're a month away from training camp, guys. How crazy is that? We're almost here. I think everyone's starting to get excited. And I'm excited to see people in the comments section today. Shout out Matt. Shout out Wasatch. Shout out a few different people in the comments already joining us. Please hit the like button if you haven't already. Help us grow this show by hitting the like button and leaving comments. If you can leave comments during these live streams, but also then after when you're watching back the video, that'll help us grow the page. And obviously subscribe if you haven't already. Please subscribe, get people to subscribe. Trying to build this bad boy out, and then we're going to have a lot of big time content coming for the season and for the main preseason. So without further ado, where are we starting today, Jacob?
All right, so here's the research Ryan has presented us. He measures what matters in terms of next season scoring at tight end. And like all these positions, basically fantasy points per game is king. But if you want to talk us through the rest of what you found, Ryan, I found it pretty interesting. Some of the numbers here are a little bit higher on like receiving yardage, market share, for example. So talk us through some of these stats that matter at tight end, what we should be looking for, and then we'll get into some of the specific player profiles.
Yeah, yardage market share is where I want to start. So for anyone unaware, it's just the tight ends receiving yards divided by all of their team's total receiving yards in games that they were active for. That's receiving yardage market share. I think a pretty underrated stat at all positions, but especially at tight end. What it really tells you is if a tight end has a high receiving yardage market share, he's probably one of the top two options in his offense. So that's like a kind of a heuristic that has been tested over time that a ton of people have done studies on that really shows like for fantasy football, you want to find a tight end that's one of the top two target options on his team. And I think receiving yardage market share being so high relative to all these other stats really speaks to that. It really does matter. It just relative to his team where he kind of places in that target hierarchy. Same thing with first read target share, first read targets, getting like that nice extra bump above just kind of all your other target stats, like your catchable targets, which for wide receivers in comparison were a lot more important or were the most predictive type of target. For tight ends, it's first read targets, which really does to me say again, if the tight end is kind of one of these first two options in an offense, he's actually getting a lot of first reads rather than just kind of being late in the progression, the check down option or what have you, then that is really what we're looking for in fantasy is a guy that's like an actual featured weapon of his own accord. But yeah, outside of that, I'd say it's generally pretty similar to the wide receiver position. Efficiency does matter somewhat, not as much as volume. I will say, if you scroll down a little more, I believe yards per route run is ahead of first downs per route run. So that's flipped from the wide receiver position. So I think that speaks to like big playability mattering a little bit more for tight ends. Whereas like the wide receivers that have the high yards per route run, the low first downs per route run, those are like your downfield field stretchers, oftentimes a lot more inconsistent. They're not getting as many of like the easy PPR cheat code routes. And that's like not great for receivers. For tight ends, that's like a pretty good quality, I think, just because you want like some upside on a per touch basis for these tight ends or on a per target basis, right? You can have a Kate Otten, but like, where is that getting you in fantasy? There are tons of tight ends that average between 7 and 10 fantasy points per game. You want the guys that have the more explosive downfield skill sets more so at this position. I think of like a Tucker Kraft or a prime George Kittle, of course, for like the biggest obvious examples of kind of that archetype that I'm talking about. So that's really what I'm looking for. I want a top two option in their offense. I want them to be a featured weapon, and I want them to have like some explosive downfield ability, just because tight ends get less volume overall. You want them to kind of maximize that, as opposed to with wide receivers, the best ones just get by on a ton of volume, a ton of easy like PPR type of cheat code routes and targets.
I've had one thing I've been wondering since I learned we're doing this show and we're talking on tight ends. And I wanted to know if your research led you in this direction. I feel like there's a conception, or maybe it's a misconception, I don't know, Ryan, that at this position specifically at tight end, a lot of the time, at least over the years, this may be changing now, the volume was so lacking that you could just put in a guy who's likely to get a touchdown, or like these touchdown or bust type players, and they could fill that position out and oftentimes like finish inside the top 10, top 12 of scoring. And I think about some players this year who are kind of lower on the rankings that may be fitting that billing, like a Mark Andrews, for example. Well, I am somewhat intrigued by, to be honest, in this new offense and with Isaiah likely gone. Was there anything in your research that showed you like where were touchdowns relative to the rest of the positions as it impacted tight end scoring?
Yeah, I mean, we can pull it back up, but touchdowns are further down the list than I would have expected. So yeah, you've got receiving touchdowns here behind deep targets, behind targets per route run, receiving touchdown market share as well, kind of lower there. So that to me, I think it's absolutely correct that guys can get into the mid-range, low-end tight end one ranks just with over a season, just without like really that much volume, just having the touchdown efficiency. Mark Andrews has done that for basically the last couple years. That's kind of how he has hung around there. But I think in general, it's not always going to be the same players every year, right? What this study is doing is saying on an individual player basis, what about this player is going to predict them scoring fantasy points next year? I think we get a lot of those types of high touchdown rate seasons from tight ends where they're just in whatever it is, the perfect offense, kind of the perfect storm. And that's something that tends to regress, that isn't always going to stick around every single year. For Mark Andrews, maybe it does because he has Lamar Jackson and he's just really good in the red zone. And that's just kind of how he's utilized at this point in his career. But like in general, if you say, well, one year a tight end has a really high touchdown rate, that's more so to me like a reason to think, okay, maybe this won't continue. Maybe this recipe for them scoring fantasy points isn't necessarily as sustainable.
Sure.
All right, I'm going to throw up some data on the screen then. Let's talk about some of these players and where they fall within these metrics. So it's sorted by fantasy points per game from last year, which has been the most highly correlated. And then we noted that yardage market share was up there as well. So anybody who stands out to you here, like the Juwan Johnson season last year was really something. I think circumstantially things are going to be a lot different in New Orleans this year. But if you were like wondering where the hell this random season came from for Juwan Johnson, it was all this underlying stuff. Like right away in week one, it was like, look at the route rate, look at the percentage of the targets and the yards and everything. First three targets, all of it looked good. And that's how you can identify some of these players that do kind of come out of nowhere at the position. Tucker Kraft stands out as well, obviously, was really, really in a good role. And then also has the crazy efficiency where His XFP per game, expected fantasy points per game, is 9.4. And then he's producing 14.7 actual fantasy points per game because of the long plays, because of the touchdowns. So yeah, I threw some of the more meaningful metrics here, according to Ryan's research, average depth of target and air yards right here, along with route rate, yardage market share, first read target rate, and then the FP per game and XFP per game, all this on fantasy points data.
One that I kind of wanted to bring up and like pose to you guys, just because I've been struggling with this player personally. Like everything I've written has just been out of both sides of my mouth. I like have not taken a hard stance for 2026 yet. Is Harold Fannin. So we talked about how receiving yardage market share is one of the most predictive things. These are the top rookie seasons in the fantasy points data era for receiving yardage market share by a rookie tight end. It's Brock Bowers, Kyle Pitts, Harold Fannin is third, ahead of Tyler Warren, ahead of Aronde Gadsden, ahead of Colston Loveland, who of course didn't come on till later in the year, ahead of Sam Laporta, like ahead of all of these like really great tight ends that we've had come out in the last 5 years. I don't know. I don't know what to do with Harold Fannin. Like the team environment has changed so much. We've got two new wide receivers that they drafted in the top 40. We have the GM saying that both Fannin is like their version of Brock Bowers and he's amazing and expects big things from him, but also that Jerry Jeudy's not going to be affected by any of the new additions. So it's like, how often is Harold Fannin getting on the field? You've got Todd Monken, who has gotten good tight end production on his offenses. But I mean, also Brock Bowers never hit a 24% yardage market share under Monken at Georgia, right? So I don't know. There's just so many like kind of countervailing things here where I want to buy into this amazing rookie season by these stats that matter from an extremely productive college tight end too in Harold Fannin. But I just don't know where I get like, I want, the temptation is to be really fantasy brained and basically say it doesn't matter. Like he'll be good on the field. He's really good. He did this in his rookie year, but there's also a temptation to be very like real football brained in terms of will he actually be on the field enough? Like, can we galaxy brain our way out of this in terms of how the Browns will operate? So yeah, I just wanted to pose that to both of you guys. And I'm just trying to collect opinions on Harold Fannin this year, basically.
I've been on all sides of it. It really does feel like the meme where it's like smooth brain and then like galaxy brain and like all the stuff in the middle where you're trying to figure it out is wrong. And like, it's just really simple. He's really good and he's built for fantasy football. That's kind of where I've arrived, is like, I started over your galaxy brain with Harold Fannin last year. And now I think I'm just a smooth brain and I'm totally fine with that.
And I started this off season, at least considering myself to be out on Fannin, just based on a lot of the red flags you just brought up there, Ryan. But there's just so many green flags as well. I mean, some of these numbers, look at historically what he did last year. It's almost similar to the case we made, even though on the surface it doesn't feel that way, to Brock Bowers last year, Jake, when we were like, this is just potentially like, and I'm not saying this is what Fannin is, but this is like a Hall of Fame type of talent or like a game changing type of talent. And honestly, Fannin is like, he doesn't look like Brock Bowers out there. He's not as aesthetically pleasing to watch, but he gets the job done and he wins after the catch. He wins before the catch. He wins at the catch point. He just is a pure baller at this point. So the question is, like, can Todd Monken look at this roster and be like, yeah, I have talent here. Denzel Boston, obviously Casey Concepcion, Jerry Jeudy, if you want to call him that. But at the same time, this is my best talent, so let me design my offense around him. That I'm still remain a little skeptical about, though, because like you said, like thinking back to those Georgia offenses with Monken and even the Ravens offense, it wasn't designed around the tight end. Last year, it just felt like watching the Browns, at least once Shador Sanders got in there, the offense was designed to get Fannin the football. Without that, if that's the case and that is gone, I'm relying more on the player, in which case, in my mind at least, there's situational factors that could hold back his fantasy value. Are the Browns scoring a lot? Are they in scoring position often? If they're not in scoring position often and the offense isn't designed to get him the same type of volume they got him last year, are we relying too much on big plays for Fannin? So I'm like torn with him. I really don't feel great about it either right now, Ryan. I'm not sure where I'm going to land here.
This might sound stupid, but I think he's basically like Trey McBride. If you look at him as like where he's at in his career arc, he broke out way earlier. He was better in college. He was better athletically in the testing that they did. They're both smaller guys that get on the field because of their receiving. they both have good receivers around them. They both play in terrible offenses where we're worried about the quarterbacks. One of them had the crazy year last year, and the other one had a crazy year for a rookie, but didn't quite get to that height. I don't think that you need to invest in him in the way McBride did, because McBride just showed us he can like break fantasy if every single thing goes right. But Harold Fannin like creates after the catch better than anybody at the tight end position other than Tucker Kraft. Like, he is just constantly turning out extra yards and making the most out of every opportunity. And so, like, I think that that's where I'm at, is like, if you're fine drafting McBride, which basically I'm not going to be drafting McBride for a lot of different reasons, then I think that Fannin is just a discount version of that, where it's like, we know he's really good. Yes, everything around him sucks, but I just don't think it. So, like, we're worried about Drew Petzing moving on, and he's helped Trey McBride. And then Marvin Harrison Jr., Michael Wilson, like, both of them played really well last year. Like, they are players who could get more targets if they're both healthy. It could just be a different set of circumstances than last year. So what does that mean for McBride? Probably nothing, right? Yeah. Like, if he's one of the best players in the NFL, he's probably just going to get his. Like, I think things probably orient around him. And that's kind of where I'm at with Fannin. We haven't seen him do it for 2 years. We've only seen it for 1 year, but like, it was so good that am I actually in any way like worried that realistically somebody is going to decide to like prioritize these two rookies or Jerry Jeudy over him? I don't know. Yeah. That seems so unlikely. Like, you run into trouble when you are assuming rational coaching, for sure, especially when it comes to like organizations like the Browns. But I just, that's kind of where I've arrived at, is like, my dynasty teams where I have Fannin, which is a ton of them, I sent out offers this early in the offseason where I was like, let me see if I can turn him into something really, really good that I know exactly what it is, like CeeDee Lamb or whatever.
Right.
And when I can't, I'm just going to hold him. I think it's basically the same set of circumstances as last year, except there are better receivers, but it's again a team that's probably not going to be able to run the ball well, that's going to be playing from behind all the time,
right?
And they're just going to throw a ton, and he's going to accumulate a ton of stats, is my guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's the positive, another green flag. Like, they will be in better game script this year. Just straight up losing Myles Garrett is going to be devastating for that defense. He's that impactful of a player, so they should be in better game script, hopefully. Because there were some games last year where it was like, you know, they were in it due to their defense, like 14-13, 14-10. Those were games where he wasn't getting, I guess, the upside potentially he can get. So basically, I get it, Jacob. You're buying in so much on the player. Though I will say this, we did have a similar process for Brock Bowers last year. I understand the injury is more of a factor there, but I do feel personally from watching year one to year two, and you can agree or disagree with this, in year one with Bowers, that offense was designed entirely around getting him the football. In year two, I did not feel that way watching the Raiders last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Brock Bowers thing sucked. If Fannin gets hurt and his entire offensive line dies.
No, I just mean more around like the offense designed around getting that player the football.
I just don't know, man. We've talked about this before, and it's like we saw half of a game of it and then it was over. I don't know.
It is true.
And then like once the offensive line went down, it was like everything was fake. Like at times they just were like, we're not running the ball today. And it's like, okay, well, what? Like, that's not a real offense.
That
like,
is fair.
I don't know. The Raiders.
No, that is a totally fair point. When your offensive line gets to that point of broken, you can't really run your offense. So that is a good point.
Yeah. But yeah, Fannin's a really interesting one. Really, like all of these year two tight ends are extremely polarizing. I think Colson Loveland is clearly the one we feel the safest about. But then like, what do we do with Tyler Warren? This is another offensive environment that we're not sure what to make of. And then what do we do with Aronde Gadsden? I have no idea, really.
Charlie Kohler hype train starting to engage right now.
There's a lot of different ways that you can, you know, tell yourself a story about Gadsden, about the Chargers, about Mike McDaniel. So we're going to dig more into the data here. And if you want to like find our opinions on these players specifically, we are going to be putting out videos on the tight ends this week and next week on Beyond the Box Score. So Tyler Warren, Harold Fannin will be digging into them more and more and more. But we're going to take our first break, and when we get back, we'll talk about Tyler Warren here. Here's where I've got Fannin. Here's where I've got Tyler Warren. So I do prefer these two coming off injury, Tucker Kraft and Sam Laporta, in better offenses. Mm-hmm. I think there's more upside for them. So I come in a little bit lower on Warren than consensus. We just had a really interesting discussion with Ben Gretsch and Jacob Sanderson where we got into the Colts. And the more that I think about the Colts, I do think that the role is going to be really good for Warren this year. So I don't mean to be low on him. necessarily. But I just don't think he's as good of a player as Fannin. That seems crazy because he got drafted in round one. But he's not as good after the catch. And he is good after the catch, but Fannin's a unique player there. And he's not nearly as good of a route runner. And so I'm worried that, yes, like Michael Pittman being gone, I think will create more target opportunities for him in theory. But I also think that teams are going to be more focused on Tyler Warren this year than they were last year. And I just don't know yet if he's like the type of player to be so good that he's just like winning in spite of that. I feel like so much of what he did last year was often a function of the offense working really well and him being wide open because defenses are trying to scramble to cover every blade of grass with what Shane Steichen was designing, with three threatening receivers and Jonathan Taylor all there as presences. And I just don't know if it's going to be the same this year. So I'm really curious where your guys' heads are at with Warren. The stats do look good in terms of like what mattered last year. He's going to pop up in like the top 10 or 12 in most of these, which is pretty impressive for a rookie. So anybody feel free to take that. I don't want to be too low on him.
What I'd say, I guess first just on the Colts, because that's like really what's going to inform my Warren opinion.
Yeah.
I actually think people are underrating the idea of like, what if Steichen just kind of does it again? Like Daniel Jones is going extremely low in best ball. Nobody is like believing in that bounce back. All the Colts receivers, Alec Pierce, Josh Downs are not really being viewed as like, wow, this could be like a really efficient offense. It was until Daniel Jones went down last year. He led the NFL in passing yards over the first 11 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever it was before his injury came into detail. There's like a weird like dual thinking, I think, where when the Colts offense was awesome and working for most of the first half of the year, Jonathan Taylor was amazing. He was like a top three running back. And Tyler Warren was great. Like there was touchdown equity. It was like enough for everybody to eat, basically. I feel like we have just remembered that for Jonathan Taylor. He's just a consensus top three, top four running back going in the top five or six picks. But we've like forgotten that for every other Colt. Like we're just like pretending like this offense won't actually be good. It won't just like function in the same way. So one of those has to be wrong to me. Either Jonathan Taylor is like a horrible round one pick, or all the rest of the Colts are massive values is kind of how I'm looking at it. I'd be in on Warren. I would prefer Warren to a Harold Fannin. I would prefer him to, I'd have him ahead of Laporta too. So at cost, like what Warren is the tight end for and basically all ADP right now at cost, I'm not getting like a ton of Warren. I don't know that the like tight end one overall upside is necessarily there, which I would want it to be with where he's going in drafts. But I'm pretty good on the Colts. I think as you said, all of Warren's stats, fantasy points per game, yardage, market share, everything we just said really matters. We're pretty strong. So yeah, I don't really see, I don't think Warren is taking like a step back this year in terms of like how we think of him in fantasy. He's just not going to be like my upside wins championships, like flag plant at the position.
Which I think is fair because of how much of what he did in year one, at least, was manufactured and designed for him. But the reality is I'm kind of with you. Like I've been out on Warren for a while. I was out on him last year during his breakout. I just thought it would come down, and it did eventually once teams adjusted to some of the free access plays the Colts were just basically relying on with him, whether that be using him as an H-back or fullback out of the backfield, those leak routes, and just he's wide open off play action because so much of the focus is on Taylor, or just in the red zone. Like he ran a ton of those corner routes and those flag routes, and it was like, all right, well, he's open based on the design of the offense and based on where the defense has to really afford bodies to try to stop this Colts offense because they were humming, like you said, Ryan. So it's like if they get back to that level, I think we'll get a lot of opportunities for him to score in the red zone. We'll get free access plays for him between the 20s that kind of, you know, get him into, instead of like the one catch for 18 yards and a touchdown, like 4 to 5 for 60 and a touchdown, which again, if the touchdowns are there, he's going to outscore a lot of these players, Fannin, Laporta, honestly, most of them. So I see that upside. The cap ceiling argument is interesting to me though, because at least in year one, I don't feel like watching him was like watching Fannin or McBride or some of these
players. Agreed, yeah.
At times during the stretch where Gadsden was really hot, they were using him more like a receiver, and he was running intermediate routes and getting open and making big plays and really used as a mismatch. Warren, I never felt like was used as a mismatch, even though he maybe is. I think he's capable of it based on his Penn State stuff. I feel like he was more just used as a free access player who they could find, and he could win his matchup when the defense was focused elsewhere. So it'll be interesting to see. And as far as the offense goes, they had more than double the first read target rate last year. I think Daniel Jones had more than double the next quarterback. So it is just kind of a bet on Steichen. What'd you say?
What are you saying? More than double the next highest quarterback, like his first read target.
So first read target percentage. So Jones was 8%, and I think the next one was like 3.8. The next quarterback.
I'm not sure what you're looking at. His rate was probably like 80% or 75% or something.
It was one of the highest.
Was the highest for sure. And I believe it was more than double the next quarterback, but I could be wrong on that. I'll have to find that stat.
No, they range from like Caleb at the bottom, like 58%, to the top is like 75-80%. So I'm curious what you are referencing, but it can't be that.
I'm gonna have to find it. It was an 8% versus like the next one was like 3.8. I'll have to find this. Don't for now, let's abandon that. But regardless, like I think he led the NFL in any, no matter how you're charting it, in first read target percentage.
For sure. Yeah.
Okay. So let's just keep it at that for now. Scrap the double part. Even with that in mind, like you're relying on, like, I just don't think how that offense operated last year, Tyler Warren is the first read enough of the time, is I guess how I would say.
If you look at these, like it really wasn't, for as high as his route rate was and his target share, like early in the season, he was pushing up into the 30% target shares and stuff like that. He was tied in six with a 22% first read target rate. So like that's high, but it's not significantly higher than like Juwan Johnson, the rate that I gave earlier, or even Travis Kelce in last year's Chiefs offense, Mark Andrews, they were all around 20%. And Michael Pittman had a ton of those first read targets. So I do think we could see that rise. I think he's somebody who's going to be used all over the place, and I think it makes sense to be into him. I think there's a pretty clear tier break for me after Warren. I think it's a top seven, and then you get into Kyle Pitts, and then I have no idea what to do with the position. I'm way higher than people on Gadsden, apparently. I more just want to swing on that upside. So let's talk about these two, Pitts and Gadsden. They're sort of similar to me. I think Pitts is potentially somebody that looks really good within this research that Ryan did, though, in terms of what mattered, what is predictive going into the next year. I think it's, I don't feel super comfortable copy pasting it over, because I think there were a number of things influencing it that have changed. But at the same time, outside of Drake London, the receiving room is so barren here, for Atlanta, that it might just be a similar situation where Pitts just gets tons of targets. So, tight end four in yardage market share, tight end five in first read, target rate, and tight end three in XFP per game. So is he just clearly underrated this year, Ryan?
I don't think so. I think he goes basically exactly where he should. This is what I'll say on Pitts, especially with the first read stuff. The stat I had was that if you look in his games without Drake London, and when Drake, the two games that London was playing super injured, after he came back from his PCL, so like a six game sample, his first read target share in the intermediate range, if you just go like 5 to 15 yards, was like up above 30%. He was like clearly the offensive focal point, in like the most frequent depth, that we want to see our tight ends operating at, right? If you look in London's games, that falls to like 13%. It was like less than half. Pitts was not, it was not like that he was the number two. It was London, and then it was everybody else, including Pitts. Like he was not at all like kind of a level up from all of the Falcons' other like tertiary receivers, right? So to me, that says, I think that's closer to what Kyle Pitts' role looks like anytime Drake London is on the field. And I'm just like not that interested in that player on an offense that we have like some questions about. Tommy Rees is a tight end guru. That's like the main thing that's keeping me from saying like Pitts isn't like the worst pick in fantasy drafts, basically, is that, Reese just manufactured that rookie season out of Harold Fannin, for example. He had, it was Michael Mayer and Tommy Tremble at Notre Dame and got both of them drafted in the first few rounds. Like, so there's history there. I can see Pitts like being a part of the offense. But I don't know that I see like the league winning upside for Pitts. I don't think he's ever, I think there's always going to be a pretty big chasm between him and London, kind of regardless of what a play caller does. And like underratedly so, like the Falcons really kind of went out of their way to make Pitts like a viable full-time player last year. Like they went from one of the highest 11 personnel rates to one of the highest 12 personnel rates with Zach Robinson. So it like, I don't think Reese is going to like bring it even that much further in that direction. So I just like where we're starting from is like basically the ideal run out for Kyle Pitts. And I think it probably mostly happens again, just with the subtraction of Drake London, hopefully not getting injured. So I'm just kind of not that interested at cost. Aronde Gadsden, I think, is a pretty similar bet to Pitts, except he's way cheaper and he's on a way better offense that I want to be buying into. So like I can go fully into Gadsden. You guys can talk about Pitts however you want to kind of do this.
I don't know much on Pitts. I feel like you hit on a lot of the different angles there. Did you want to add anything on Pitts, Dan?
No, I've got covered well by Ryan.
Yeah, I think he played well last year, played better. Like the breakout was real, but it's kind of like a Trey McBride breakout a little bit, where like it was real, but I think a lot of it was just kind of forced because of the circumstances.
Yep.
All right. So yeah, Gadsden is going to be my biggest late round tight end flag plant this year.
Oh, nice.
I acknowledge the risks. I understand like this could literally be like a total zero. You have to be okay with that at the late at the tight end position in redraft. That's no different than him scoring 8 fantasy points a game and being totally useless, right? So I acknowledge he could be a zero. He could not actually win playing time, not actually get enough routes, but he's cheap enough to where that doesn't matter to me. So I'm only focused on the upside case for Gadsden. And what that looks like is we have literally seen it from Mike McDaniel before. I will pull up the stat, but basically, if you look at the last 17 healthy games from Jonnu Smith and from a post-retirement, post-rap career Darren Waller, you get, what is it here? I know I have it. I'm sorry. This is so bad. Awful radio. Geez, here it is.
Waller's the one. Yeah, similar.
I think they're similar in that none of these guys are going to get like 80% route shares. Different types of players for sure. But yeah, if you just take the last 17 games of Waller and Jonnu, you get 14.5 fantasy points per game, which would be the tight end 5. That is all on like a kind of broken Tua Tagovailoa offense. You add Justin Herbert into that equation, you get even more touchdown equity. I think we can see like the top 3 tight end upside there and tell that story. In that split for Waller and Jonnu, they only hit a 70% route share in 3 of those games. Gadsden literally did that 4 times last year. It was like the most sick month of Aronde Gadsden, where he was in that pseudo full-time role, averaging over 16 fantasy points per game. I'm just willing to take the risk. I'm willing to say that he finds a way onto the field enough. It doesn't even have to be a 75-80% route share. As we've seen with Waller, with Jonnu, McDaniel is like the one coach that can easily make that sort of work for like a part-time flex tight end. And if he does, if he just gets on the field enough over Trey Harris, over Quentin Johnston, over David Njoku, it can kind of be any combination. I don't really care whether he plays in the slot or in line or whatever. However it happens, like I want in on that potential outcome, because yeah, what Gadsden showed when he was in a full-time role last year was amazing. It's like exactly what you want out of a fantasy tight end. He could like actually stretch the field. It was really, really nice, and I just want to take that dart throw. And in redraft, at least, it's very cheap to do so at basically no opportunity cost.
That's a great point. It's essentially just like the type of player we want to be targeting in that range of your redraft draft, somebody you can either cut or breaks out early for you. I think when it comes to Gadsden, he's another one of these polarizing players for me, like Fannin, because I think the talent is obvious and clear. Jacob and I pontificated about him last year when we broke down his film. Honestly, for this podcast, we're just like, this guy's really good at receiver. And not only that, the Chargers used him as a mismatch. Like, he was being put out, split out wide. He was being matched up in put in positions where he can win his matchups one-on-one. And he was consistently doing it at the catch point, after the catch, pretty much put the full display on of like potential star type receiving talent, at least how I felt watching him. Now, what I'm most curious about, because you were talking about it, Ryan, like, I don't care if he ends up in line or slot, whatever it may be. They sign Njoku. They sign Kolar as well. Kolar is a player I remember loving at Iowa State from a receiving standpoint. Never used that way with the Ravens. Both Njoku and Kolar are pretty much, in my mind, going to be inline guys. I guess you can put them sometimes out in the slot. What I'm most interested in seeing is if McDaniel gets creative and considers using Gadsden as the H-back. Because if he does use Gadsden as an H-back, and just in that sense, use an H-back in his offense, I think that opens up their offense to a lot of different possibilities. I think you can hand the ball to him out of that spot, which they did with Tyler Warren over in Indy a little bit. I think he can run those same type of routes Warren was running, those free access leak routes, just clear cut, like, okay, the quarterback looks into what he thought he had, you know, tries to work through his progression fast. It's not there. The picture isn't there. The safeties have rotated back. Let's just hit Gadsden here for a quick win, and let's see what he can do after the catch. I think he's more likely to run that, play that role than Njoku or Kolar for sure. And it's just a matter of, will McDaniel work on his offense? I just think it's a really difficult offense to predict, because you can go 11 personnel with his offense easily, in my mind. You can go 12. You can instead use like Gadsden as an H-back, which I think is probably going to be interesting to see. And a lot of it still is going to be how they can design it to keep their run game part of their offense. McDaniel, the big thing he does, Jacob and I just watched a bunch of him for H-N. The big thing he does is he tries to marry the pass game and the run game at all times. And that's much easier to do when you're not in 11 personnel. So I think you're right. You may be onto something. Like, there could be more playing time than people are baking into his ADP and his market right now.
Yeah, the ADP is a huge thing. We're talking about him versus Kyle Pitts. People in the chat are like kind of debating it, and it's like they don't go anywhere near each other in drafts. Yeah. That's just my ranking where they're close to each other.
Yeah, I love that point about him playing the H-back. I hadn't like really fully considered that, but that's really smart, and I could totally see that working. I feel like with Charlie Kolar, I know he's like a prospect that a lot of people really liked, but when have we ever seen a tight end get into the NFL, not really be used as a receiver for years and years, and then suddenly like become a guy that's actually getting route volume, getting target volume? Basically never. I don't think we've ever seen that. Yeah. So to me, it's like,
yeah.
A lot of smart people are really big Charlie Kolar fans. This is something I consistently hear, but to me, it's just, like, that has never happened before. Yeah. We get way more of like the year two tight end breakouts from the day three guys that like flash in a way Gadsden did than Charlie Kolar like ruining them. So yeah, to me, it's like, if they go 12, that's another opportunity for Gadsden to just be on the field as a second receiving tight end and gives you a little bit more in the run game compared to a receiver there maybe. So yeah, I just think there's lots of ways for Gadsden to kind of creatively get on the field in the offense. And yeah, I want to be in on it.
I'm really nervous that they're going to re-sign Keenan. I don't know why they would, but if they do re-sign
Keenan. Oh, if they do that, like tear up every like take I've given on the Chargers offense, it doesn't make sense to me. Keenan, it doesn't sound like they are going to either.
Don't
to
block Trey.
Be
Harris.
Fair.
Don't
yeah.
block.
He
had enough.
He led the team in red zone targets last year. He also had a 26% of the end zone targets.
Oh.
So both of those, I think, if he's gone, that's great for everybody else, including Gadsden, who could be a huge weapon in that area for sure. That's how I'm expecting this to play out, is he likely has like a 50 to 60% route rate or something, but he's one of these specialized players who, if the offense is really, really good, can give us some big moments because he's going to be out there on important downs, third and longs, where he can get big explosive plays, and then around the red zone too. So, you know, Herbert's like, I think fifth or something in MVP odds. And if we get that kind of season from him, then I think there's a decent chance that some of that goes to Gadsden, who is I think he had like a 22% target per route run rate in the red zone last year, which is really good for a rookie. And I think that would probably be his role. And so for me, he's like, we said, draft him late. And if the role isn't good earlier, then you can drop him if you want something that you feel better about. And then also any sort of non-lineup setting league, best ball type of formats, I think he's fantastic for that because he's probably going to give you some big spike weeks. All right, we have a lot more to talk about. I've got other, like Brenton Strange I want to get to. I've got him way ahead of consensus, apparently. I didn't realize that we were so low on Brenton Strange. A lot more to talk about after we hit our second break here. So after the Harold Fan and Tyler Warren tier, it's Pitts for me, and then Gadsden, and then Likely, Isaiah Likely on the Giants, and then Brenton Strange. Strange was really good last year on a per route basis. He was tight end 7 in first downs per route run, behind only Brock Bowers, McBride, Hunter Henry, Colson Loveland, Kyle Pitts, and George Kittle. He averaged 1.7 yards per route run. That's also really good. There's a lot of mouths to feed in this Jacksonville offense, but I also don't, maybe Parker Washington. There's no clear target hog. I think Strange has a chance to carve out a fairly reliable role week to week, and he's a really good player. And so kind of like the Chargers to some extent, like if Jacksonville overachieves and we get one of these seasons where, again, like Liam Cohen's quarterback has 40 touchdowns or whatever, Strange could end up being a sneaky productive player. I'm curious what you think, Ryan, because I'm apparently way too high on him. I know Dan loves Brenton Strange. I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, I agree. That's your path for Brenton Strange, is just that this offense overachieves through the air and in the touchdown column. To me, Strange, though, is like the, he's sort of on like the, in years past, like the Hunter Henry or Dalton Schultz spectrum, where this is not a player that's very likely going to be a top two target in an offense that has all of these really good wide receivers that we're really excited about. Like to the point that I'm worried about basically every Jacksonville wide receiver just getting Green Bay Packard and having like a 60% route share and being super frustrating every single week with like no defined roles. That's kind of my base case for the Jaguars offense right now, especially if we're getting like 30 to 40% of routes out of Travis Hunter. Like that's coming out of somewhere. It's not coming out of Strange, I suppose. So maybe he just is the one that's always there playing in line and everything. Like I agree he's a good player. I just don't think that he measures up like as a target earner, as like an explosive play guy to all these other options that the Jaguars have. So he's more of like, his upside to me is he's becomes like a mid-range tight end one on touchdown efficiency on a good offense. But that's like the ceiling to me. That's like kind of capped, I think. It's not like he just like becomes one of the biggest options in the offense and is like threatening for top three tight end status or anything.
I do think that like if there were one injury though, that he could be that guy, particularly Parker Washington, if he were to get injured, then you kind of don't have like a reliable catch and run underneath outlet. In which case it's like, if it's Parker Washington is out of the picture and it's Jacoby Myers, BTJ, him and Travis Hunter, I think that he could realistically be getting similar targets to Hunter or whoever it would be as like the next piece behind Jacoby Myers in that situation. I think that he's just interesting because he can pile up targets because he's reliable. He was a very good, like I said, first down converter. Like he's somebody that Trevor went to a lot when the play broke down or when it was an important third down or whatever. And he's the short yardage check down, which Dan and I did our film review on Jacksonville, and something that stood out was Liam Cohen designed like really, really deep route designs for this offense. And often against the blitz, there was no like clear hot. It was more like downfield shots. Trevor had the highest average depth of target and highest deep throw rate against the blitz last year. I do wonder if maybe more of that goes to Strange. He missed a bunch of time last year because those plays didn't necessarily work all that well when Trevor was taking those deep shots versus the blitz. So he's just somebody who's interesting to me, and I think is a little bit slept on because he's an ascending end player who keeps piling up better and better stats. I think the Hunter Henry comparison makes some sense, but I just think that he's a better player and he's a younger player and he keeps getting better. So I'm interested in him. I just wanted to shout him out because he's free in drafts. your question though is interesting here. I want to pose this, like, which tight ends do we think actually could be one of the top two targets in their offense outside of the top guys? To me, named, and if anybody stands out to you, please shout it out. To me, it's like maybe Isaiah Likely could be something like that if everything goes right for him and he gets the best possible outcome here in terms of role. Maybe Gunnar Helm could be that. I know I'm on an island in thinking that, but I do think that there's a lot of ambiguity as to how this offense is going to function. Maybe Mark Andrews could be that. I don't know where the targets are going in this offense. And as a new play caller, anybody else stand out here? Like Dallas Goedert could maybe be something like that.
Yes. Goedert super stands out to me. I think Goedert is like the version of the Brenton Strange bet that I prefer. Yeah. Just because we have seen Goedert be a mid-range tight end one on basically this thesis, where anytime AJ Brown has been out, Goedert has averaged around 12 fantasy points per game. I think you get like a very high floor with him. If this Eagles offense is like actually way better than last year, then the ceiling comes in a little bit there. But I think Goddard's like the perfect one to just kind of pair with like an Aronde Gadsden or something. If you're drafting two late tight ends, Goddard is like the easy kind of high floor, like this guy will definitely be startable type of player to me. I don't think Eli Stowers matters at all for his route share, for his playing time. I think for all the talk about there being more over the middle throws in the Eagles offense this year, AJ Brown is vacating the most of them. And Dallas Goedert was like right there in terms of how often he was getting the ball over the middle. So I like him quite a bit. Another clear, like possible number two in their offense is Chig Okonkwo to me. I don't know if you were planning to bring him up later or we can spend time on him now. It's up to you guys, but yeah, I feel like everything we hear out of Commanders camp is basically they hate all these receivers, and that like Antonio Williams, cool, but like he's a rookie. We don't know like what we're getting out of anyone other than Terry McLaurin. It's a team with a 6.5 or 7.5 win total. They could be in several trailing game scripts. You have Jaden Daniels, who put together, I think it's like underrated how good his rookie year was from a passing perspective, just because everyone just constantly talks about will he keep running? Is that part sustainable? Like he was very good. He was leading like an efficient offense. Okonkwo to me is a guy that could kind of benefit from trailing game scripts, be and kind of like work his way into just being the number two target behind a Terry McLaurin. Okonkwo by yards per out run, all the fantasy points per game, like all the per route stats is better than basically any other receiver on the Commanders over his career. So he's like one people are forgetting. Maybe a little bit more of like a best ball-y type of take, or like an oh no, I missed out on Aronde Gadsden and I have to draft a tight end in the final round of a managed redraft league type of guy. But he's one that I don't want to forget about and that I wanted to bring up.
I don't know how he fits into this new vision they have for the offense. You get what I'm saying, Dan? Like David Blau and all this that we've heard about their what they want to do with the offense. Like maybe they're just not going to be able to do that, and they're going to have to do more and more of the dropback stuff, and like they're not going to be able to just bully people with Ja'Cory Kroski, Merritt, and Ka'Tron Allen or whatever. But yeah, I don't see it. That's something that stands out to me, is like I wonder how much he's actually going to play. If they really do think that he's better than their other receivers, I guess. But to me, I doubt maybe he's better than Antonio Williams. I actually really like Antonio Williams. And I don't think he's probably better than the guys that can sign in terms of Stephon Diggs or Deebo Samuel or whatever.
If they sign someone, my opinion instantly changes. If Diggs signs there, then I no longer care about Chig Okonkwo.
I see in the comments, you know, it says, A-Rod says, Jaden likes his tight ends. He will look for him. I don't really feel like using the Zach Ertz samples, like the small sample size of Zach Ertz or Jaden Daniels, applies really at all to Jaden liking his tight ends. If you look back to LSU, he rarely used Thaddeus Moss at all in the pass game. That was a top-down pass offense where Jaden Daniels was looking to take shots downfield and intermediate or run. I think last year when it came to Ertz, or the time, you know, the past 2 years when it came to Ertz, it's more along the lines of like that was how Cliff Kingsbury designed his offense. And I don't think that's how this new offense is going to be designed with Blau. In my mind, this tight end position is going to be pretty muted in this offense. So while I do agree with the points you've made, Ryan, where like it's like, hey, look at this situation. Chig may be better than options they have. I just don't trust the scheme to play out in that way, I guess. So like for me, like for example, a guy like Likely, there are some options on the Giants that I can make the case for that could compete with him from a talent standpoint. But I've seen Nagy utilize that big slot. And if Likely is playing that big slot role, that's where I feel like we can answer that question of like, is it possible to be a top two arc targets in that offense? Same thing goes for Andrews. Like being top two targets in a Ravens offense isn't great, to be honest, like over time. But as it stands, and as I look at it with Declan Doyle coming in, that could be more valuable to be a top two target earner and a tight end in that offense. The guy that I wanted to point out, just kind of nobody somebody we haven't talked about at all, and it's not a clear path whatsoever, but it's a bet that I feel like in this range makes sense. Kenyon Sadiq. Like if you just think about it, no one really looks at him. He was a top draft pick, early draft capital. They don't really have anyone I trust other than Garrett Wilson in that offense. I know A.D. Mitchell's a guy I like, but and he's had a nice mini camp, but like he's been very unreliable as an NFL player from a work ethic, from just like a getting yourself in the mix standpoint. Kenyon Sadiq, who I didn't love coming out of college, I'll be honest, as a prospect, but that doesn't matter to me. The NFL loved him. I think there's a non-zero chance he could be a big factor in the Jets' offense. And he was good early draft capital and a good talent, good after the catch, great athlete. Like he's someone, if to answer this question, like which tight ends could be one of the top two targets in his offense, it wouldn't surprise me if he's one of them.
He definitely could be, right? I mean, beyond Garrett Wilson, we really don't know where the targets are going. That's a good call out.
Yeah, you can make a case for like four different Jets to be the second target, right? Which I guess does speak to your point. But Sadiq, like the main, other than like my thoughts on him as a prospect, the thing that worries me is he didn't participate at all in minicamp earlier this month, right? Which to me that's like pretty big for a rookie tight end where the development curve is a bit slower at the position, like to be missing any sort, even if he's in for preseason and training camp, like just missing any sort of time in your first offseason is like rough to me. I mean, we saw that with Colston Loveland, right? He missed a good amount of his summer, and that he's awesome, but it took until week 15, right? So
good point.
Yeah, I don't know, just things I think about with Sadiq, but I totally hear you.
Dallas Goedert's the one who stands out to me after digging into this conversation and thinking about it. He's too low. I don't think I had updated this following the Brown trade, and I think I would clearly move him ahead of Mark Andrews, Kincaid, Gunnar Helm, and probably Travis Kelce as well. So he would be right behind Jake Ferguson. I think you could make an upside base case for just taking him over Britton Strange as well. He's really not. Yeah. I mean, I might move him all the way up like ahead of Gadsden, honestly. I feel like that makes a lot of sense. And he's a really good player. Like even last year where he was dealing with injuries and stuff, his first down per out run rate, I think was like tight end 10 or something. Like he's been a really good player throughout his entire career. He's just been blocked by like prime Zach Ertz setting the all-time tight end reception record. And then, you know, AJ Brown and Devontae Smith, who are like two of the top 12 receivers in the league or something. And now, I mean, maybe Mekhi Lemon takes a 70 to 80% of AJ Brown's targets or something, but maybe he doesn't. He's a rookie. I don't really know exactly how that will go. Maybe this offense passes more. Maybe it's different than the straight drop back out of shotgun stuff all the time, and we see more play action type looks that end up in tight end targets and stuff. Like there's a number of ways this could go, and he's a really good player. So I think he's a really interesting one here. Consensus has him still outside of the top 12 tight ends, and I think in that range he's got about as much upside as anybody.
I'll play devil's advocate a bit on Goddard, who I think I'll probably be out on this year. I do like the points you've made. I like him as a player when he's been on the field. He'll be 31, I believe, this year. And he has really, actually, he has never played a full season at the NFL level, never started all 16 games. 15 games last year was a high out of the last seven seasons before that, where it was 10, 14, 12, 9, 9, 14. Until last year, he had never scored more than five touchdowns in a season, 2, 3, 3, 4, 3, 5, 4, and then busted out for 11 touchdowns last year. I think that's very likely to come back down to earth. This is an offense that in general doesn't throw for a lot of passing touchdowns, unless you can see that taking a big step forward with Mannion coming in. And that to me is unlikely in my mind, given what I've seen from Jalen Hurts. So I just think there's limited touchdown and scoring upside here. He's an older player with a big injury history. I'm not seeing it with Goddard, despite liking his talent and liking the idea that Brown is gone from the offense.
What do you think about this? If he was like he's somebody you could draft and like drop, right? Because he's right. so cheap. What if he comes out and has like a huge week one, week two, week three?
Yeah, like it starts all early before he's hurt or whatever. Yeah.
So we've got here, like this splits over the past three seasons without AJ Brown on the field. It's only 171 routes, which is like half of a tight end season or whatever. So it's a relatively small sample size, but 2.6 yards per route run, 11% first down per route run rate, 26% target per route run rate. I'm just saying, like, if he comes out and he goes off in the first week of the season, and then we've got like this type of data as well, it's like, well, look at this. Now we have 300 routes of him without AJ Brown, and he looks like the best freaking tight end in the league, you know? And people, his perceived value is going to spike in a way that nobody outside of the top 12 probably is going to.
True.
I could just see that where it's like, oh, we've got the new play caller. Jalen Hurts actually looks kind of good or whatever. And it's like really easy to tell a story where you can trade Dallas Goedert as like a top five or six tight end all of a sudden. I just, if anybody's going to spike early in the season, I think he makes sense as a very likely candidate.
Yeah. I think Goddard, I think I said this earlier. I think Goddard specifically on two tight end builds is amazing. Like it Goddard plus Gadsden, or if you're like a believer in the George Kittle, like injury recovery, Goddard plus Kittle makes a lot of sense. Like that, so a build like that, where you just Goddard is a guy, you know, is going to be running routes, you know, at least will be startable. You can take like the total other upside moonshot, also on your bench. I think that's like a really interesting way to approach the position, depending on bench size and league settings and everything, obviously. But yeah, if you're in a position where you can draft two tight ends, then that's like just a build I'm really intrigued by, and probably what I'm going to end up having is like one of my primary strategies at the position this year.
The chat loves it. They said, thanks, fellas. Goddard, Gadsden. I think that's a really good combination for managed leagues where you can trade, just take two upside shots and then sort it out from there. All right. Go follow Ryan Heath if you have not. It's RyanJ_Heath on Twitter. Go follow Ryan. Check out all the awesome stuff happening at Fantasy Points Data. Let's try to get out of here under an hour. Ryan, can you plug the work that you've been doing, what's coming up with your writing, what people need to check out in terms of what they can find right now on the website, and all the good stuff coming from the FP Data team?
Yeah, right now, the first thing I should shout out is our Fantasy Points YouTube channel. You can go watch us on YouTube. I am live on our channel every Monday morning now, so you can come watch me there. I talked to Scott Barrett about tight ends yesterday. It was a lot of fun, actually. So yeah, go subscribe to the Fantasy Points YouTube channel. Go subscribe to the Fantasy Points Best Ball channel. Jacob Sanderson and I have been doing a ton of content, a ton of best ball drafts, different builds over there. So that's been really great. And yeah, just coming up for me, I'm just working in the background on my giant play callers article that'll be out sometime in July. It's a big one. I'm very excited to get that one cooking and get it to see the light of day, hopefully soon here. So yeah, that's all my stuff.
Love it. And for BTB listeners, we'll be back with you Thursday with another live show. Check it out, 11 Eastern. We're excited to do that. It's a big one. Keep it locked and loaded. Please hit the like button if you haven't already. Please subscribe and please leave comments. Those are the three ways, all for free, that you can help us grow the show. Otherwise, Jacob, anything else before we sign off?
Nah, great. See you the next one. Day.
Yep, we'll see you Thursday.
Everything has to come to an end.
Now streaming only on Paramount Plus. The acclaimed series, The Chi, reaches its final chapter.
We from Chicago. It's my home.
From Emmy Award winner Lena Waithe.
There are two types of people in this world. Those that reach for more and those that just enjoy what they got.
This The Chi. Anything's possible.
Singing this song to you.
The Chi, the final season now streaming only on Paramount Plus.